Clean your gun and tune your bow. We're the Hunting Collective Show, calling hunters new and old. The Hunting Collective Show, where facts are facts and opinions are subjective. You're listening now to the Hunting Collective.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Hunting Collective. I am Ben O'Brien, and I think Phil hates it when I yell into the microphone.
It always startles me. I never get used to it.
Yeah, 175 times. Well, probably not that, because you weren't here the whole time.
No.
But it's tens of episodes that you've been on.
At least tens.
I've yelled at you at the beginning of each one. Now, that may be, Phil, a precursor to when we're shooting shotguns. Are you going to be...
You're going to yell. Yeah! You're gonna yell in my ear every time you pull the trigger.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody.
That's how I'm going to tell you to shoot the turkey when it's in range. Usually I go shoot.
Listen, I've never done this before, but that doesn't sound effective.
Yeah. Hey, and then you boom, shoot him right there. Because he'll put his head up if I do that.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Okay. Well, welcome to, it's not the penultimate. That's next episode. What's before penultimate? Is there something? Look that up. Somebody Google it.
Anti-penultimate.
Whatever. The thing before the penultimate.
Yes.
The pre-penultimate episode of the Hunting Collective we have this week, next week, and then the week after, and then we're done. Forever and ever. We're very emotional about it, but we're going to put on a good show. We're not even going to think about it, are we, Phil?
Think about what?
Yeah, I don't even know what you're talking about.
Yeah, okay.
Exactly. We're not going to, because then we might cry. Phil definitely will cry.
Yeah, well, yeah, I've brought in at least 6 boxes of Kleenex into the podcast studio. Yeah. I think that'll be enough.
Yeah, the whole next episode is going to be Phil just sitting here while I play In the Arms of an Angel and see how long it takes.
How about instead of that, we play the Sizzler commercial? Because I think, honestly, that would probably make me cry first.
Yeah, that's true. So basically, the next 3 episodes, we're going to try to make Phil cry. And that's really all this is all about.
Yeah.
But today, being that we have our own... accidental conservation organization that we started here at THC. We're going to have Lan Tawney on. He is the man, the myth, the legend, the public land defender. I think he's the CEO and president, and he just runs the show over there at BHA, Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. He's been on the show many times. We'll call him a regular guest, but good to have him back on to talk all things Rendezvous, which you can come see me at the old BHA Rendezvous. First weekend in June. You can come check me out there, hang out. We're all going to camp. It's going to be great. It's going to be a socially distanced camping good time. One of the coolest conservation parties that I've ever heard of. And speaking of that, Phil, we're back from the trek for turkeys. What do I look like?
Haggard.
Haggard. I feel haggard.
You don't look too bad.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Like I was telling you, it was, I think we're out there for 11 days. I mean, probably 12 days total if you count the travel time on the trek for turkeys with First Light. You heard from Ford Van Fossen last week. We got a couple of updates for you. Namely, that we have raised $28,770 in the trek for turkeys. So thank you. Big round of applause, Phil. Clap for everybody. The turkeys are rich now. I think the turkeys actually just get that money in a savings account. They can use it however they want.
We should expand on this. let's role play. How would a turkey spend money?
Yeah, I don't know. He's like, more bugs, please.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I know that's going to be real. Let's cut that out. That was real lame. but that's what right now. There's 821 members we've signed up through our Trek for Turkeys telethon. Content will be going on the First Light YouTube and First Light Instagram channels all the way through the end of the week, all the way through Saturday. You'll see me shoot a turkey in Nebraska. You'll see me call in some turkeys for Kevin Harlander in Nebraska. You'll see Kevin Harlander shoot a turkey in Wyoming and me shoot a turkey in Wyoming. So there is approximately 5 turkeys that get killed in those episodes, if you're counting, if that's the thing that you're there for. We're also going to highlight some conservation projects throughout that content. And we're looking to get to 1,000 members signed up by the time we're all done with this, which means by the end of this current week. So I plan on signing up for some sort of, I think that the gold membership is what I'll be signing up for. I can't remember how they exactly do it, but I'm going to live on Instagram or somewhere where you can see it. I'm going to sign up for my big donation. So my plan is to put as much of my own money as I can into this to make sure that we really drive home what we're doing with the NWTF, because it's important. They're an important organization. And again, we saw some on the ground work through our travels with guys like Jaron McJunkin and Jason Tarwater, regional folks, biologists, regional directors for the NWTF. So we got to see what those guys really do. And I'm a little bit jealous of their jobs. I think I would love to do their jobs. And now that I don't have a podcast, Phil, I got a little extra time.
Yeah, so much free time.
Yeah, so much free time. And so that's you need to do it. There again, if you want to go to youryour.nwtf.org/firstlight, I know that's a lot, or you can just go over to First Light's Instagram stories and swipe up whenever you see the content. You can be a part of this pretty kick-ass campaign, this Trek for Turkeys. Again, 821 members have been signed up to this moment right now. Hopefully by the end of the week, we'll have 1,000 and we can celebrate a big chunk of money going over there to our good friends at NWTF. Shout out to everybody that volunteers for that organization, that is a part of it, and that helps support turkeys and turkey hunting, because Phil the Engineer is about to embark on his journey. People have, hundreds of people have asked me every time I do anything. I'm at the grocery store, I'm like, I have a coupon. They're like, oh, do you now? Well, when's Phil's first hunt? Like, this is my life right now, Phil.
Listen, I'm going to be honest with you. It feels weird to have like a dozens, nay, hundreds.
It's
let's say
lot.
Dozens, conservatively, people care, be more invested in something than you are. By you, I mean me.
Yeah, and I think that's partly what's driving their investment in it. They want to see a triumphant moment where you finally come, that there's a clarity in your
It's a lot of pressure.
Path. Yeah.
Because I'm like, well, what if I don't feel that moment? Well, first of all, what if I don't kill a turkey? Which is like, honestly, right. I'm fine with that. But if I do, and it doesn't like, I feel like you and half of your audience wants me to have some sort of like, yeah. I see the light moment.
Yes.
And it's too much.
As you're out in the woods, I'm basically going to be in your ear going, remember how much this means to me.
Yeah.
Remember, this means everything to me.
I want you to read the 10th Legion with your left eye and aim down sights with your right eye.
Yes, I've brought Colonel Tom Kelly along to read passages from the 10th Legion while you're
hunting. Can you help me out? Shut up, Tom!
Tom, we're trying to kill a turkey. That's really kind of the narrative here, Phil, as a man that likes to stoke a good narrative, is that you are going forth as a babe in the woods that doesn't really want to be in the woods. Particularly. And we're gonna force you into an epiphany.
Okay.
Or can you be forced into an epiphany?
We'll find out.
Yes, we'll find out next week here on the show. So the plan is, we can make the plan right now, but the plan is, I want to try to hunt locally here a little bit. Locally, I mean in undisclosed
Sounds
locations.
Great to me.
Yeah, you like this.
Yes.
But you still have to get up early. You prepared
I'm
for
I'm fine with that.
4 a.m. Good?
Oh, yeah, sure. Oh,
okay. Yeah, sure. 4 a.m. We'll probably meet at
We've both had multiple children.
That's true,
I can get up at 4 a.m.
Yeah, too sure. 4 a.m.
Easy.
No problem. Are you going to vomit on me when we get to the... We'll meet at a gas station or something.
Sure.
And we'll probably get like a weird egg sandwich with too much grease that doesn't help us.
Yep.
And then we will go forth into the field here locally for a number of mornings, probably 3-4 mornings. Then we'll come back, do our jobs, you know, come back like 10 o'clock, do our jobs. But we do have to have kind of like break glass in case of emergency plan. Go, we got to travel. Are you okay with like a travel? We like go 2 or 3 hours to a place.
Yeah.
Okay.
Here, I'm afraid 2 or 3 hours that you're saying now, I'm afraid that means like 4 to 5.
It really kind of does. Yeah. How did you know? I'm trying to undersell it.
Yeah.
So anybody write in, drop us your waypoints where all the turkeys are. So me and Phil can have a really easy, an easy hunt. That's what we'd like to do. But that's what we're going to be doing over the next week. And you will hear that in the coming weeks of the podcast. We'll see how it goes. And, I will be filming it all, and then we will release it on my Instagram, BennyOB301, I believe. It's been a long...
Don't ask me.
It's been a long trek for turkeys. Synapses aren't quite firing. But that's what I'm going to do. I'll film it all. I'm going to be right behind. We're going to have some people accompany us. Hopefully, we can have Miles Nolte come along.
Love Miles.
And he's going to maybe film it and then do some like Jim Nance type, hello, friends. Welcome. And he's going to do some play-by-play possibly as well. So just get ready. It's going to be a party. We're going to have fun. It's a celebration of all the things we hold dear here at the Hunting Collective, including new hunters, Phil the Engineer, turkeys, and hopefully White Claw, because that's going down.
Oh, sure.
If we get one, Daddy's getting hammered.
Yes.
And I'm going to.
We haven't talked about it on the podcast, Ben. White Claw has announced.
What?
A new line of drinks called White Claw Surge.
They have not.
That are 8%
alcohol. How did I miss this? I've been on the trek for. Did this come out?
Yeah.
Holy. 8% alcohol?
8%.
Let me Google this.
And I'm.
Have you had
I'm
one?
I'm afraid for you. I have,
have
to
you
be
had
honest.
One?
I have not. I don't know if they've hit shelves yet. Search if you search White Claw Surge. I think there are new flavors as well.
This one says it was cut off, but the title on my Google was White Claw Surge Blood. Holy crap. They've gone Four Loko on us. Blood Orange is the actual flavor. 8%, okay. At 8% alcohol, White Claw Surge is what happens when hard seltzer reaches new heights. With a hint of sweetness from the unmistakable taste of blood orange, This mouthwatering take on your favorite hard seltzer provides a bold surge of refreshment. Now, is surge just means like, does it got some caffeine in there too? Or they just put more alcohol in it?
I think it's just more alcohol.
Holy moly. All right. Cool. I'm in. Let's go. I will share a White Claw Surge with you post turkey killing.
Turkey death. Got it.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Now, everybody out there, we can't endorse that kind of activity, but we can say we're doing it.
Oh, sure.
And you can do whatever you want. You can do what we're doing. I don't know what I'm saying.
You're an adult. Make your own decisions.
I don't know what I'm saying. This is, all right, listen. We got one thing that we do have. Turkeys are going down everywhere. A lot of people having success. But a lot of people in our chapters are having success. So if you didn't mind, Phil, I would like to highlight some of our chapter successes. Is that okay?
It's a great idea.
Thank you. Particularly, well, I'm just going to go down the list here. If your turkey season hasn't opened yet and you're listening to this, I'm sorry. I don't know what to do. I mean, it is almost the end of April. And if you live, A.B. Rich wrote in and said, turkey season doesn't start in New England until the end of April at the earliest. And I would move away from there immediately. I don't know
I'm guessing that means it goes longer too, or is it just a shorter season?
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Because you got to sit around all April.
Watching everyone else kill turkeys? Okay.
Yeah. I don't want to be tortured for the month of April. The month of April is supposed to be a joyous occasion wherein we hunt turkeys all together as one.
Mm.
And so maybe we take on this idea. Now, if I was a biologist, I might say, if we hunt, the earlier we hunt turkeys, the more it affects their breeding patterns, yada, yada, yada. But if I'm being completely selfish, social media, I got to look at all these people killing turkeys.
And as we've discussed on the podcast, that's what it's about.
That's what it's about. Yes. Me. As I said in the very beginning,
yeah.
It's about me. But A.B. Rich obviously didn't get one. But there's a lot of people that did. We don't know if this is a young lady or a young man, but Montana Precker from Minnesota, he shared his story through Derek over there on our Minnesota page. They camped out in the state forest with his recurve last weekend. He said he was not expecting a ton of success, but glad to spend a couple of days in the woods and maybe see a bird. First morning, went on a pre-dawn hike trying to locate a roost with no luck. Went to camp, heard a gobble a couple hundred yards out. See, we could do that. Go back to the truck, eat a sandwich, drink a surge.
No, Ben, we saved the surge.
Oh,
until
yeah, you're
after.
Right. You're right. Thank you for being a voice of reason.
That's why I'm here.
Can't have a midday surge. Okay, I've been talking about ethics. I'm coming off the rails this one. <All right. laughs> Whatever. I went back to camp and heard a gobble a couple hundred yards out. Quickly set up my blind, maybe 50 yards from my tent, and started calling. You just got in the tent. You didn't have to set up a blind. You could have just crawled in your tent. Big Tom came over the ridge in full strut, drumming, spitting, and came in within 40 yards. I didn't get a shot, but calling in a public land bird on my first morning made for a pretty cool experience. I ordered a decoy to entice them those last few yards, and I'll be back as soon as possible. He said, I don't know if that's riveting, but I think it is. So congratulations on calling one close, Montana, and keep getting after it. Luke Reeves tripled.
Whoa.
In Nebraska. Well done. Looks like with his brother. So well done there. Dave Campbell got his first bird the other day, it looks like. I'm trying to make sure I read all these comments right. There's a lot of stories that our chapter leaders have shared with us. So congrats, Dave Campbell. That looks like a nice Eastern turkey. Well done, man. Looks like you shot it right in the neck, which is what you're kind of aiming for. Keith Sprague said, I was able to hunt with my turkey mentors who have been teaching me the past three seasons. First day of this season, we had some birds that would not budge for a call, and one Tom who came in close, but I didn't quite seal the deal. Second day, I heard more birds calling at one spot than I've ever heard before. At one point, at least 8 to 10 times were calling a group of guinea hens, a rooster, an actual peacock, and my expert turkey mentor calling sweet nothings to them all at the same time. He doesn't give any details to how that went down, where the peacock came in.
Mm.
I struggled not to laugh out loud. Chewchakes led the charge trying to find that sexy hen behind me, but when I attempted to swing the barrel up and around the tree trunk at my 10 o'clock to get a bead at those youngsters coming in, they got spooked. We headed off to try a different spot and spotted a Tom in full strut in front of a hen in someone's yard. I slowed down and wishfully brought up Onyx, hoping for a sliver of public land within calling distance. Lo and behold, the next property over was public land. We pulled over, jumped out, found three cozy tree trunks, and started calling. It took a few minutes for the Tom to finish with the hen he had been with, but sure enough, he came gobbling when he was ready. A small berm blocked him from view for about 50, 60 yards. Listening to him work closer had my heart absolutely pounding. He started to swing around to the side, wary of the hen he couldn't see, but at about 30 yards, I dropped him in his tracks. A nice mature Tom, at least 3 years old, who had probably just finished siring this year's poults. He is only my second turkey, and I couldn't believe how shaky I was, but I am so thankful to have him to share with my family. He's delicious, by the way. Keith, now, before we get to any more of these, Phil, how are you feeling about this? You're part of a community, assuming that yes. You signed up for the Montana page.
I'm in two pages.
Oh, what are the pages?
Montana and New England, because I was personally invited by A.B. Rich,
who
is my only friend on Facebook, and I will not accept anymore. I promised that to A.B.
Rich. A.B. Rich is that exalted position.
Yes. But yeah, no, I've been seeing, I saw Luke's pictures the other day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just, because didn't you, listen, I don't want to bring back any dark memories. You didn't have a very successful turkey season last year.
Correct? I did not. I did not kill a bird for the first time since I was 12 or 13. I don't know. Okay. For a long time, for quite a while.
Because I don't think it was just you either. I think, I don't know if it, does this seem typical? Is it typical for like to have like so many people like be having success or is it more?
No, well, listen, yeah. I mean, I don't know if, you know, you never know. Like we were talking about correlations the other day. Like I was feeling like in Texas, and in South Dakota and other places, like you see a lot of turkeys on the roads.
Mm.
But are these just places with a lot of turkeys and a lot of roads? So invariably, you're going to see them there. And that's the only place you have visibility anyway. Or is that turkeys like to be in roads? I don't know. Same thing applies here. Am I just looking at more? Am I asking for more interaction?
Exactly.
No, I think this is, you know, it's pretty normal. Turkeys can be, as everyone listening to this will know, turkeys can be easy. Like it can be, you can go set up by a rooster tree and make two completely incompetent calls and they come running into your decoys.
Mm-hmm.
You can hunt them for weeks on end and not hear a gobble. In fact, the trek for turkeys was kind of like two halves. The weather sucked throughout, but it was kind of two halves. The first half, not a lot of gobbling. Turkeys really doing things that I wasn't used to them doing. And the second half was pretty normal, right? Mm-hmm. We find a fired up bird, we call them in, we kill them. You know, we double a couple of different times. And so, but that, I think that's indicative of turkey hunting. And that's why it's so incredibly interesting, because there isn't a playbook for the person that says, I went out in camp and we hunted 3 days and got 8 birds. And there's another guy who was like, I was in we got one. And that was, we feel like we shot it as we were walking back to the truck.
Yeah.
So, but even the stories we're hearing from Keith and all these other guys, like this is pretty normal if you're a public land hunter. Like you see a turkey in somebody's yard and you're like hoping so bad that there's just some public land somewhere near that yard.
Yeah.
And often that's what you're doing. quite honestly. So we caught a couple of birds in Nebraska under a fence off of private into public, and that's a big part of the game. Dare I say a strategy, Phil, that we might even get into here in the next couple of weeks.
Okay.
We don't know. But guess who got one? Eric Hall.
Eric Hall.
Eric Hall. Patron saint of THC. He said, I got on this bird about 9:30, heard him gobble. He ended up down the mountain with another gobbler. He gobbled at the call, but he wasn't moving. I got tired of messing with him. And I said, I'm doing something. If it's wrong, you can only hunt till 1 o'clock in West Virginia, which is a good thing for napping, which is true. I pulled out two pot calls and went to work with a fighting purr and simulated wing beats. And Jake Cox, he went deep. They started gobbling and moving closer. So I done some more and waited a few minutes, put my calls beside me and gave them a little every few minutes. They came over the hill and I shot one in the face at 11:10. Amen. That was Eric Hall. Chris Docker said, one of the Washington admins, Mike Carden, and myself took out two brand new turkey hunters to Nebraska for 4 days. We got a few birds, but the first was one of the mentees' first birds of any kind ever. We hiked up a long road late afternoon. It was hot. Things had been quiet for a couple hours, and the road had about 800 feet of elevation gain. We were taking a shot at trying to pull Tom up from ag fields below. See, I've been there. There's a field that Mike knew to be productive about 400 feet below a knob at the end of a logging road. As we got close to the end of the road, we were sweaty, hot, and out of breath. Mike hit a peacock call. We got a gobble. Now, why are peacocks so prevalent in this?
I have no idea. It's the first time hearing anything about peacocks in relation to turkey hunting.
Somebody can involve me in this. I've never heard. I don't even know what a peacock call would sound like.
Nope, I don't either.
So please write into thc@themeateater.com to tell us what the hell a peacock call is used for and what it even sounds like. Anyway, he hits this peacock call. Apparently it works because a gobble that was closer than we expected happened. They quickly set up one hen and got into position against some trees. He says, Mike is by far the most experienced turkey hunter and our best caller, so we settled in with a couple pretty quiet yelps. Bam, gobble back, almost on top of him. He waited a minute or two and hit it again. Gobble, even closer. He's coming in. Within 4 or 5 minutes, he's there. We can't see him, but we can hear him and feel him drumming. He comes over the ledge, gobbling and getting his strut on. Adrenaline is pumping. And later, the mentee told me he couldn't believe how bad he was shaking as the Tom came into view. From my vantage point and the mentees, we could see the Tom and had four buddies with him. I'm thinking, let them get closer to the decoy, be patient, but Mike couldn't see the other Toms. As the main Tom turned back to look at his buddies, Mike thought he was spooking and said, shoot him. Bam, shots fired. The other Toms take to the air and are gone in the blink of an eye, but our mentee laid down the big boy. It was awesome. He was beyond excited. The hike down, we just recanted the story and laughed, and he is hooked. Damn right, Phil. Feels real good. The THC can bring people together and they can go turkey hunting. A bunch of other stories. TJ Norman in Western Oklahoma. Congratulations. I could go on and on. John Stelfew wrote in with a cool story. Everybody. So it feels, if you want to feel a part of a community, you see dozens, hundreds of people sharing the same stories of shaking when the turkey gets in there or having to play the same game to try to get a time to come within range. Those be the ties that bind, Philip. And you soon will be telling your own story, will you not?
I shall.
He shall. All right, everybody. Keep hunting turkeys. Your, Y-O-U-R dot NWTF.org/firstlight. If you want to get a membership, there's an awesome contest going on over there where you can win a Weatherby 18i, Onyx Premium membership. You can win a First Light kit styled by one Steven Ranella. And maybe even Phil the engineer will come and hang out with you guys while you do it. You never know. I like to promise things for Phil that he's not aware of. So go do that. It really means a lot to us. We're trying to get to 1,000, as I said. That is very important. The Trek for Turks. Thank you to First Light. Thanks to NWTF. Weatherby, everybody that's been involved. The Trek for Turks will be over this Saturday, but you can watch all that content, as I said, over on First Light's Instagram and YouTube channel. And now, Phil, we're moving on to our buddy, Land Tawny. Lan Tawny, hello, sir.
Good afternoon, Ben O'Brien.
What's going on, my friend?
Oh, just enjoying another day in paradise in Missoula, Montana.
It is really paradise. And we were just talking about how there's nothing really for anybody in Montana.
That is true.
Just wheat. That's
true.
Wheat farmers.
Wheat and some mining, I think we were saying.
Yeah, a lot of mining, a lot of wheat. Beyond that, I don't know what there is. Rachel
nothing
Schmidt.
Nothing to see, nothing to do. Nothing
Schmitty.
To see, nothing to do.
Didn't you kind of do that for a job prior to your new gig? You were kind of working on this whole outdoor recreation thing in Montana, weren't you?
Yeah, outdoor recreation economy.
It's
That's the last time you and I had the chance to visit.
Yeah,
the
last time you
podcast.
Were here. I would say you both of you guys are recurring guests. It only takes two times to get you into the recurring guest slot.
Awesome. I have reached new status.
You really have. You really have. Lan Tawny, first of all, we're coming on. Last year around this time, all of our lives were thrown into turmoil, and we were feverishly trying to figure out what the hell to do for BHA Rendezvous. Really, the entire organization as a whole, but particularly the big event that is Rendezvous. You want to take us back in time? Because I do want to kind of talk about how COVID impacted the conservation world and impacted what we do and how we're coming out of it. But take us back to that moment in time, man. Last year, around the end of April, you remember what you were thinking, doing, whether you were wearing pants?
I'm not wearing pants now, so I don't know if much has changed since last year. But I think it was like an oh shit moment, right? Like, here's this gigantic party that we throw once a year. It's like the Rendezvous, true sense of the word, like bringing people together, stoking the fire, swapping stories, making a little bit of money. Like, all of a sudden we realized, oh, we can't do that. And so we pivoted to virtual. And Ben, I got to say thank you for the help that you provided and just those conversations that we had leading up to that. And then also just your engagement throughout our virtual Rendezvous that we had. But we had a rad time, man. It was fun. And while we couldn't be there in person, I think we pulled off a pretty good event. And we learned a ton. And so, you know, that the Rendezvous last year, I think, set us up for the rest of kind of the quote unquote year of COVID. And that year in COVID was learning how to work virtually. And so Rendezvous was the first shot at that. And, you know, we were down 50% as far as revenue goes. But we also were able to engage way more people across the country. And one of the great things that I heard after Rendezvous last year from multiple people was, man, I've never been able to attend Rendezvous. Either like financially it didn't work out for me or the timing didn't work out. But since you guys did something virtually, I was able to participate. And oh my goodness, did I have so much fun. And so, you know, when we should have been doing virtual before this, to be totally honest, like so we could include more people. But what we learned last year is that, you know, virtual is a way to engage everybody. So, last year was kind of an oh shit moment that I think everybody was experiencing, but we learned a lot from it and are better for it.
So we came out of COVID and I did have fun land planning that with you guys and being a part of that. I'd, you know, obviously been a part of them before, but never that intimately. And as we were talking about when we were going through that, you know, you figure you're going to really learn some things that you wouldn't have learned unless forced into that situation. You know, none of us thought we were going to be stuck where we were. And yet here, there we were at that time. And can you give us a sense of kind of the ebbs and flows in the conservation space from your perspective, you know, as the pandemic hit and as now we seem to kind of be coming out of it, we can gather again. And in your opinion, where are we and where do we start? And kind of give everybody, you know, the lay of the land, if you will.
The lay of the land from land.
That's right.
You know, I think that, you know, we weren't the only people that were affected by the lack of opportunities to be able to do in-person events. And so, you know, that hurt the entire community. I would say that, you know, 2% for conservation in particular, I think, made people aware of that. And so, you know, I think there was, you know, we ended the year last year with one of our better years at end of the year giving. Just because, you know, people knew that we weren't having these events and that we were We were down 50% at Rendezvous, but like 30% overall for the year. And so, you know, that wasn't a hard story for people to learn because it was happening to everybody. I think that, you know, another thing that we learned besides just do virtual was that elected officials love virtual events. They don't have to like travel somewhere. They can go spend a half an hour and then, you know, be with 30 people or 50 people or 1,000 people that are their constituents. And so we learned that elected officials love virtual opportunities. So I think that's something that not only we've learned, but hopefully some of our counterparts, you know, other organizations. Where we are now, and we're sitting on a powder keg, man. Like, I mean, people are ready to get together. And, you know, as, you know, every single state is kind of different, every single community is different on how we're getting back together. Where we can get together, we're already having events and we're starting to stack up. Like our chapter coordinators right now are super nervous. They just see the calendar starting to fill up with events that they need to be a part of. So I think we're sitting on a powder keg, and I think Rendezvous, like the Rendezvous, you know, is tough to capture the energy from last year, you know, because we're all virtual. I think there was still some of that energy. But in person, it's like, I mean, it's hard to describe, but it is electric. And so I am looking forward to that. I think the people that are coming are looking forward to that. So it's actually going to be exciting. And then people are going to go home, and those little tentacles of excitement are going to go home. And I think we're going to have even more events and really get back online, which is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I feel like the roaring 21s, man. Like every time I go, I was at the grocery store the other day, and people were just bopping around. Like I felt like the nervousness was a little bit had subsided, at least for a little bit. The weather's starting to get nice, at least it's trying to here in Montucky. But Rachel, you have one of the best titles ever. You're now employed at BHA, which we are extremely, and I can't tell you how excited we are. I don't think there's a word for it. Twitter pated is the only thing I can think of. What's your title now? And you know what, you can leave it a mystery of how it came to be, or you could explain. But the title itself.
Oh, yeah. I feel like I'm running a track record of epic titles through my career, to be completely honest. I live a good life and do a lot of amazing things. But yes. So I am the director of Innovative Alliances here at BHA. I am heading up a department I am affectionately calling the Energy Development Team and Department. And we are doing fundraising. We're doing business development, and it's about growing support and resources for our members to get all of the amazing work that they do done and amplify it and ramp it up. So yeah, I've worked with BHA for so many years. It's been awesome. You know, I started working with BHA when I was at Kimber, and then I was actually on the national board, stepped away from that, worked in the governor's office. And I just am fairly familiar with BHA as an organization on the national level and the state level and all of the members and, you know, intimately know the kind of work and the kind of that is done by our membership, the energy. I routinely tell everybody, if for one moment you think that you are cool or a badass in any sense, just go hang out with some very humble BHA members and you will feel like a pile. Because they're remarkable people and doing remarkable things every day and puts me to shame and it makes me want to work harder. But we just do things differently at this organization. We work differently. We get things done differently. So when you're looking at, you know, a business development team, you know, do we want to say it in a traditional way? Well, no, because we don't do things traditional. So that's where my title came from.
Yeah, I think everybody on this chat here, we've all kind of spent a lot of time with BHA. It's been particularly big part of my professional and personal life for the last, I don't know, 5 years probably. Land, where are you at year-wise? How long have you been immersed?
I hit 8 years this May, dude, which yeah. is like, I can't believe, like, it's one of those things, it's like my kids getting older. Like, everybody tells you it's going to go faster than you think it is. Like, 8 years seems like just like a blink of the eye, to be totally honest. And I was actually preparing for this today, searched on your name, and an email came up from Ben Long, and it was like, Ben O'Brien, ? North American board. And so it's like, dude, like, it's just, it's fun to be part of a family, man.
Was that question mark like, why did you do that?
No.
Or
yeah. Actually, this was after you were on the board, and he was like, "What are you doing?" No. He was one of our stalwarts, I would say, and Ben Long recognized who you were and the opportunity to provide value to a growing organization, and he thought you were a good idea, and we haven't looked back since.
Well, I did not know that until just now. Thank you, Ben Long. Ben Long has intermittently throughout my career sent good advice and plaudits and things as we've gone along. An exceptional individual there. But yeah, I mean, like I said, I've spent a lot of time in the organization, and as Rachel, you mentioned, you start to pick up on, you know, exceptional individuals that have passion for the things that we have passion for. And it's hard to describe. And I will say the reason why I wanted to have you on, there's many, but one of the things that marks my yearly kind of transformation is I get about every January, February, I get super stressed out about life. I'm trying to reset life, right? You're trying to re-get your priorities. There's invariably new challenges, and I start to think, man, I haven't done enough for BHA. I haven't been involved enough. I haven't felt that energy in a while. I haven't been able to kind of siphon it into my life. And then here comes Rendezvous to save me every single year. That's why last year was a bit of a tough one. But I probably yearly just call Land and say, hey, man, I think I'm not doing enough. I don't feel connected enough. And then the Rendezvous comes, it saves me. And I'm like, oh, I am energized. I feel like I've been with my people enough to go forward and do good work. So, Land, you want to kind of give people your best description of, at least in our world, the importance of the Rendezvous itself?
Well, Ben, I'm glad to hear that it fills your bucket, because it fills mine too. And I think it fills everybody that comes to Rendezvous' bucket. What I mean by that is that, like, yeah, we all go through these cycles, right? Like, you get through the winter and now we're into spring. And this year in particular, you know, I'm anticipating my aspen leaves like sprouting. Like, I'm going out every single day and looking at those buds right now, because I'm just so excited about it. You know, I had northern flickers and some grosbeaks this morning on my feeder. And so, like, spring is like this rejuvenation, right? And so that's really what I think Rendezvous would be, like a rejuvenation and fill in the bucket, like top number one. But as I talked about earlier too, is it's just this opportunity to come together and really have a good time with all these people coming from across the country. So when Rachel describes, you know, these folks that she gets to meet that are humbler, I mean, I'm humbled every single day. Like, I don't know, like, you know, like, I'm very lucky, one, to know these people, but also to learn from them. And this is a great chance to, like, you know, get around, you know, a group of folks that not only you can learn from, but they're really fun to be around too. So it fills your bucket. It's absolutely, like, fun, and you learn something. So there's not many things in my life that check all three of those things. Specifically, you know, I think that we get together and the training part is really like learning some skills. Like, I know Hank Shaw this year is going to be teaching us how to cook fish in the backcountry with like corn husks. And when he told me about this, I was like, corn husks, dude, lightweight, and then you can throw it in the fire. Like, I always feel weird about that tinfoil, right? And that tinfoil, you got to scrunch up if you bring some with you and then stuff it in your bag somewhere. It still smells like food. So if you're around grizzly bears, like, what are you doing? But yeah, Hank Shaw is going to be teaching some stuff. We're going to break down a whole bison this year. Now, I could learn a ton about butchering.
I feel like we need to set the stage here, though. Hold on. Yeah. So
got to the bison too.
Okay,
early.
First of all, we're coming out of COVID, so we're losing our ever-loving minds, because I'm so excited to hopefully hug the people who will hug me back. But this year, Rendezvous is going old school. So before we talk about breaking down a bison, because I'm sure everybody's like, they're going to drag a buffalo into a convention center. No, we're not. We're not doing that. We could, and that is something we would do, but this year it's in Missoula, Montana, and it is a traditional camp out. We literally have this giant place called Fort Missoula. It's this huge outdoor venue. We have two different campgrounds, and all of the BHA events and festivities are going to be held outside. So we're creating as safe of a space as possible as we're slowly crawling our ways out of this pandemic. And we can touch on it more, we're doing it all live virtually as well. So people that are there, obviously, are hands-on, literally cutting up a whole buffalo. But everybody can join via virtual and observe everything, man on the street style, interactive questions, all that good stuff. So now we can go back to land talking about literally dismantling an entire buffalo for everyone. Oh, and it is going to be details. Outside at Fort Missoula. Okay, now go back to the buffalo.
So, Rachel, thank you for setting the stage. Ben O'Brien, you already know this, but this is why I love having her on the team. She's like, whoa, 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 land. Like, before you do that, let me talk about this, right? So the bison. We're going to have a full bison, and we're going to, like, I think I could learn something about butchering, right? Like, anytime you're around somebody that really knows what they're doing, you can learn something. But then there's this thing called a bison, which is just daunting in general. And so, like, the size of that. And so we're gonna break that animal down. I think we're going to have actually two bison. And then the next day, we're actually going to cook it. And so not only are we going to teach you how to do this, but we're actually going to feed you with the bison that you learn from as well. But, you know, the idea is really you're going to learn a ton. We're going to have a good time. So we'll have, you know, a storytelling night, which is, like, I think, like, one of the best things that we do is that everybody loves stories. But these stories are well procured, I would say. The people we have telling stories. Giannis, you know, Patelis has said yes. I've heard from you that Clay said yes. Is that correct?
Clay, I don't know. Clay might be TBD, but we can, like, right now, if we just commit to it.
I think we're saying it right now. If we say it right now, he has to, right?
Clay Newcomb will be there no matter what happens. Hey, little
suspense.
We
have these amazing storytellers. And then I would say, like, some other good time and things that we're going to do is that we have a trivia night, which, you know, everybody can learn something from trivia. That will be fun. We will have a whiskey and wine event. So we have our own whiskey now, which is Midnight Forest, done through Spotted Bear Spirits. It's absolutely delicious. And then the back label is written by my favorite dude in the world, Jim Posowitz. And then we have a wine from Passalacqua Wine that has our paw on the front. It's a Zinfandel. And I don't know about you, Rachel or Ben. I'm not a real big wine drinker, but when I hear Zinfandel, I think, like, pink fruity stuff. This is like a cab, like, well, that shows my ineptitude to be able to describe this, but it's like a red wine that is bomb. And so that's another fun thing we'll be doing.
I'm a drinker of all of it, a lot of it. And this wine is so amazing. It's an amazing Zinfandel.
So that's going to be rad. And then we're also going to have something we do in the summer called Hike to Hunt. And Hike to Hunt is a way for us to get ready, you know, for the impending fall, especially for fat guys like me. I need a time where actually people tell me what to do and I have a program. At Rendezvous, we're going to have the opportunity to do a Hike to Hunt. It's going to go along the Bitterroot River, come up this hill. We'll be finishing, as Rachel described, right in front of where everybody is camping. So we're all going to be together, which I think is probably going to be the most fun and the least structured. But it's just everybody's going to be together the entire time. And camping like they used to do in the old Rendezvous. You know, they didn't have hotels and bars to go to late at night. They hung out together and swapped stories around a campfire late at night. And that's exactly what we're going to do this year.
Yeah. I told Lane it's going to feel like kind of, you know, you see in old Civil War movies where there's different campfires and there's people gathered around and there's kind of like different places you can visit. I'm very much picturing the way this is going to be. I'm sure I've got it way off in my head. But listen, I always say,
I feel like it's not far off from what's in your head. I really am feeling this.
A random just song, sing-along is going to break out.
Yeah.
Like I just really feel like it's going to be like a warm, like the warm place we all needed 6 or 8 months ago when we were in the cold, dark apartments and houses where we couldn't leave. So I do just think as we get into this, I always try to define this for people, but I say, like, these are my people. And I hate to say it like that almost these days, but it's the feeling that I get. It's the best way I can describe it. And again, every time I return and gather with these people, you're only left with kind of an amazement of how they've come together and how they come with different perspectives, probably different ideologies, many different ideologies, to enjoy things like great field-to-table dinners, whiskey, maybe Zinfandel. I don't know. I'm not a white. Is it a red Zin? I don't know. Like,
no, it's a red Zin.
It's a red Zin. Okay.
It's a red.
That's fine.
It's good.
May I suggest that everyone gets a bison next year? In 2022, everybody attend, you pay $1,000 and you get your own bison and you get to name it and you get to watch it via, you know, some sort of webcam and then eventually butcher it and eat it at the rendezvous.
Interesting idea. We will talk
Ty
about
Ty might
that.
Be able to arrange for this. I don't know. Maybe that Ty's new business model.
I'm sure I would get in trouble for that. That's just an idea. I'm just throwing it out there.
I mean, you talk about food, though. Like, we've talked about bison, right? Like, so, like, that's going to be amazing. We're going to get to watch this thing, you know, get butchered and all the, you know, different ways you can use bison, the ways you can use, you know, tongue, the ways you can use the hide, like, all the different ways the Native Americans, you know, who know way better than anything that we would ever figure out how to break a bison down. We will learn that. But food is going to be a theme throughout the whole thing, too. And so you mentioned the field-to-table dinner. You know, the field-to-table dinner will happen on Thursday night. Ryan Bussey describes this as like the best dinner on the planet, which I love when he says that, because it absolutely is. And we'll have, I think it's 6 chefs, you know, cook the most amazing wild game that you've ever had. And in little teeny portions, so you get to try basically all sorts of different things. And I'm excited about that. We'll have our wild game cook-off. Arizona is a 2-time defending champion. Last year, I think they had, or 2 years ago when we actually had it together, they won with poached sheep balls. And so these were desert bighorn sheep balls that they poached, and that's what was the winning combination.
Wait. That was the cooking technique they used. They
poached,
didn't
yes. But it was desert bighorn. And then
killing, yes.
Yeah, not the killing. The killing was legal. The poaching came.
Legal killing of big
Thank you for
desert
the clarification,
sheep
by the way.
Balls.
That could have been taken totally out of context, and that we need that clarification.
That's going to be the title of my autobiography, Poached Sheep
Poached
Balls.
Poached Balls.
Poached
the
Balls.
The Ben
O'Brien stories.
But I would say that at the same time, bear season is going on in Montana, and you'll be able to fish as well. And so in this area where people can camp, we'll also have some camp or cook stations set up. And so the ability just to share food and hang out with folks the way we should be, is going to be happening all over the place. So food is going to be throughout the weekend in particular.
Yeah. And a lot of our, you know, most of our, corporate partners will be there. Like Traeger is there. Camp Chef is there. They're the ones in the Wild Game Village that are helping cook all of this stuff up. All of those amazing chefs that we're having at the field to table. They're the ones that are going to be out there, like doing these cooking demonstrations and showing folks different techniques. So there's a lot of really great stuff as it pertains to food. We have a hunting and a fishing village where there's a lot of skills. We've got, you know, a couple of folks that are coming and they're going to do brain tanning demonstrations, just as an example. I think Giannis is going to do some bugling and elk calling techniques, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. So, but more than anything, and of course, a beer tent will open at noon, and then conservation carnival where you get to humiliate your friends with different games to raise money for all the good work everyone does. So yeah, it'll be a good time.
There, I mean, it sounds like the best time. I'm not gonna lie. I mean, this is the pitch. This is a pitch to for people to come join us. But man, this it can't. I understand not everybody can make it to Missoula for this, but the virtual part is really what sets this up for me to be something for everybody. You know, if you can't be there with us, but you want to catch some of these vibes you guys are talking about or get some of this knowledge and be a part of it, you still can. And Rachel, you want to give people kind of the rundown on if they want to come to Missoula, what they do, if they want to jump in virtually, what is there one web page? Mm-hmm. Like, how do you direct people to get to where they need to go?
Yeah, super easy. Just go to Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, our website. Along the top bar with all of your different options, you're going to see Rendezvous 2021. You click on that. There's a brief description. There's a video there that you can watch. And then there's different choices. Like you can look at the schedule and agenda. You can look at the different lodging options. If you don't want to camp, of course, there's hotels. So you can just look through there. But on that main page, you can actually purchase your tickets. So you can purchase in-person tickets. You can purchase your camping there, tickets to our special events. And then also tickets virtual as well. So that's just a really easy spot where you can go. There's a ton of information there if you just click around, but super easy.
The only thing I would say is that's 3 days of like hanging out with some of the greatest people you've ever hung out with. And I think that, you know, Ben, you've already talked about it, but I walk away being like, I can't believe there's that many people that think the way I do and think the way I do about conservation, think the way I do about the way I like to hunt, the opportunity to hang out with folks and learn. And then one of the greatest things that happens at these rendezvous is people meet people from all across the country. And so when they want to go gator hunt down in Louisiana, or they want to go chase grouse in Maine, or they want to go up to Canada once the borders open again, they have a built-in network of people that they hung out around a campfire that know them and that they will take the shirt off their back to have them hunt in their home state or fish in their home state. So that's one of the, I think, one of the coolest things is just the people that are going to be there and the relationships that you build.
Yeah. Yeah, I think
very true.
There's a lot of people that try to define BHA, right, from within and without, right? You get, sure. There's a lot of exercises you do as an organization to define who you are and define your future. And there's a lot of people on the outside that are trying to define you, but it's an organization that's defined by its people. You know, if you want to know what it's about, just step through the door and meet a few people and you'll quickly know exactly what the organization is about and exactly its values. And as we were saying to people, you catch people from Arizona and New England coming together and immediately having a rapport. I've seen that a bunch of different times in a bunch of different ways at these events. And like I said, I could talk forever about it just because it means so much to me and so much to everybody else that takes part in it on a yearly basis. So I need a shot of BHA and I need some sunshine. Come on, Montana, please give us some sunshine.
Right.
And I spent all turkey season in the snow thus far in the rain. Yeah, some camp, and I'm definitely in a camp. I'm gonna pop up a 2-person expedition tent and a camp chef stove and a comfortable chair and just hang out. And hopefully,
what if we come by this little setup you got? What are you gonna be cooking?
Well, definitely some wild turkey. I'm gonna have probably. I don't want to commit to endless wild turkey nuggets there for anybody that comes to approach me, but at certain times of the day there will be nuggets to be had. I'm not
so when we put our noses up in the air and we smell that, like
smell that,
like those nuggets wafting through the air, we'll know where to go.
Yeah, this you can just smell the sizzling panko breadcrumbs from any direction if you get downwind, especially. I definitely have plans for some like pronghorn fajitas and stuff. That's a staple with the old Camp Chef single burner. What else? I don't know. That's a good question. Buy some poached balls now that you mentioned it.
And that's the cooking technique, by the way.
Yep, that's the cooking technique, not the way that the animal is acquired. So yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to. Lantani, what's your setup going to be?
Man, I'm going to have my seek outside. And so just in case if it is raining, by the way, like bring your gear, right? Like bring your gear because it could be raining. We'll hope for some rain, but we're all, you know, outdoors folks, so bring your gear. I'll have my seek outside tent, and then, we're going to go paddle fishing the weekend before. So if we are so lucky, there may be some fresh paddle fish that I'll be cooking like right there at the old rendezvous at camp. Ooh. Oh, look at you. You got the white tag.
Look at
you. You're a winner, winner.
I don't know what anything about paddlefish or how to get them, but I'm going to get them sons of bitches. I'll tell you that right now.
Oh, that is pretty congratulations. Awesome, dude. How excited are
you? Oh, I'm so excited. This just came in the mail. This is like my first ever paddlefish tag. And I'm very excited about this. So that's a
good
point.
I got my first last year and I'll never go back. And I will say the meat is a lot like alligator, lot like alligator.
I had a neighbor here gave me some paddlefish caviar last year. And
oh, for sure.
Yeah, salty. But he also gave me a few steaks, man, a few fillets, and my gosh, was it good. So when I learned, I drew that this year, and I didn't know the tag came as it did until just now. So being a Montana newbie, I feel like this is a bit of a rite of passage to go out and snag a paddlefish this year.
Absolutely. Good luck.
I'm ready to go. Hopefully by then I'll be just coming. I'll be on the back end of a Wyoming bear hunt with our friends at Hushin and Weatherby. So hopefully I'll have some bear in the crock pot probably over at awesome. Our place. You know, maybe some bear schnitzel. I don't know what I'm going to do. Now, Rachel, you have a reputation for doing things, let's just say, the right way and living life the way that all of us would hope to live it. Or do you
I'm
have
trying really hard, Ben.
You are succeeding. Do you have an elaborate setup for your camp? Like what describe people what you're planning to do.
Now, I wouldn't say it's elaborate. I have many different camping setups depending on what exactly I'm doing. This particular setup, I have a really fun little R-Pod camper, and I made sure it had to be used because there was only 4 years that they made a model that has an exterior rear kitchen. So I can pop open the back hatch, and then I've got an exterior kitchen that then becomes really more like the bar for the neighborhood. And I'm mostly known for really kind of being where the bar is. If you see a hatch open with blue lights and then a metal table sitting out that looks like a bar, that's me. So just stop and have a drink.
Yep. Strobe lights, any black lights, strobe lights, just...
No, I have not gotten that far yet, but it does have a stereo system. So I'm, perfect. You know, maybe some Tyler Childers, something like that coming out of the speakers, I would say.
I dig that. Yeah. Like I said, I think after a couple of days, we're all going to kind of like gather. We're going to have kind of mega camps, I feel like.
Correct.
So that's my prediction. Mega camps will form, tribes will be made, and we will battle it out for supremacy in the culinary and probably hangover game, which I often do my best to win.
Now, that said, like this is super a kid-friendly event too. We're gonna have tons of events for kids, and things that they can do, hands-on things that they can do, tons of things for them to learn.
There. My children will be there as well.
Yeah, my kids actually. It's like state soccer tournaments. They are probably not going to be there, which is super unfortunate, and I'm super sad. But yes, there's gonna be tons of kids there.
Yep. Now, like I said, to me, it's going to be, there'll be a lot of areas to hang out, free flowing. Like it feels good to be talking this way, to be planning to gather in this way after all this time. So you guys will excuse me if I'm not just beaming about the opportunity to get out there with you guys and rip it up in whatever way we can. So now that you say that, I might have to bring my older son, James. I think he will do well.
You should. And it's, I think we have two kind of camping areas too. We have a quiet camping area and a loud camping area. And so, depending on where you want to be, Ben, now it doesn't mean that you can't hang out late night at the loud camping area, but there is the opportunity to like get some rest in the quiet camping area.
Awesome. Well, hopefully everyone joins us that can make it, and if you can't make it, we definitely understand. We want you to join us virtually. We want you to get in on the good vibes.
I just want to back that up too, just one more time. It's like, yes, we all know what the energy is like. We've been there. We love getting together every year. Literally wouldn't miss it for the world, except for when COVID happens and what we did virtual. This is a really amazing opportunity for any of your listeners who have been hearing about us talk about VHA for so long, and maybe they've never been able to participate in an event, they haven't been involved with their chapters. Like, this is a great opportunity of a window into like the things we're interested in, what we like to do, what we like to talk about. We've got some great panel discussions. We never avoid tough conversations. We want to educate each other. We want to, talk about important things. So, it's a great opportunity to virtually, tap in. You'll get the agenda. You can just pop in and out. Sessions will be recorded. If you can't make something live, you can go back and watch it after the fact. So all the storytelling, everything that we normally experience, everyone will be able to experience virtually as well.
That's awesome. As we were saying earlier, that's the something that we talked about last year. We're going to learn something during COVID, and we're going to be able to capitalize it on that later in, whether it was in a year or 2 years, we didn't know at the time, but here we are able to have folks join us that wouldn't have had the opportunity in years past. So I'm happy for that. And again, everyone's heard me talk about BHA and gush about it and defend it. And this is, as Rachel just said, is an example of one way. There's many ways, but this is one way you can come and understand what the ethos of this group is, how we like to have fun, but we'll also take our conservation and our public lands seriously. And it all comes together in this one awesome, I guess we call it a weekend, but it really, at this point, it's what, 4 days? 3 days? How many days are we?
Yeah, I think chapter leaders start showing up on Wednesday, which is absolutely awesome. We have our chapter leaders come in from all across North America, though I don't know if they'll open the border yet up in Canada. So we'll see if our northern friends can hang out. But yeah, people from all across the country. And, you know, again, man, the people you meet, like you said it earlier, Ben, it's the people that define BHA. And so if you've ever had a question about who BHA is, or if you wanted to connect with the people at BHA, this is probably the most amazing opportunity to actually be able to do that.
Absolutely. Well, I want to pivot. There's no good way to pivot from this party to the next topic I want to talk about. We're going to do it anyway. You got to be in this line of work. You got to be a master of the transitions. I wanted to talk about one thing that I just wrote down. I was thinking about talking to you guys. One, I wanted to just get stoked for the rendezvous, get fully feel of the pregame action. I think we've done that. But the other thing I was thinking about, I just wrote in my notebook, bipartisan, and I underlined it about 40 effing times.
Yeah.
Because I've had, you know, Lands, you've come on before, and we've talked about bipartisan efforts and bills, the public lands package being probably the most recent one. But I wanted to just explore the concept in tangible terms for people, because everybody understands what bipartisan means, what it might mean in the political sense. But I think we're often this day and age getting beat over the head with partisanship. And a lot of people tell us that we're partisan before we've even seen an issue or thought about something. They're telling us, aren't you frustrated with how partisan things are? Like, we haven't even started talking. Is that the first? How are we going to preface every conversation with partisanship? So I wanted to just get you guys to define, like, in your daily working lives, what bipartisanship means. And that could be, you know, as you take it, and then start to line out some real tangible things in your careers that you've both seen that have happened that have, you know, brought different sides of a political ideology or social or cultural and something that's become bipartisan, because I know that we've all celebrated those things when we get the chance. So, Land, you're up first. Bipartisan.
Man, so big topic. I guess I would start that public lands and public waters belong to all of us. And those public lands and public waters, they don't care if you're a Republican, they don't care if you're a Democrat, they don't care if you're an independent. Like, all we have to do is just, you know, get out there and experience them just like anybody else. And so what a great, you know, nonpartisan place, I would say. I am partisan, and I'm partisan to, like, hunting, fishing, and conservation. You know, like, that's what I'm partisan towards, and I think that's what BHA is partisan towards. And so when we make decisions every single day, it is based on, does this improve access to public lands and waters? And does this provide quality habitat once you get there? Those are pretty easy things to make decisions on. Does that make us partisan sometimes? Yeah, for hunting, fishing, and for conservation. That's really what we're doing. I would say, you know, the rendezvous, since we've been talking about it, I'll go to the last time that we were in Boise. So in Boise, you have a Democratic mayor who showed up to our brew fest and, like, welcomed everybody, you know, that was there. So a Democratic mayor. Later during the brew fest, a Governor Little, who was a Republican, came out and declared it Public Lands Day. And so you have this Democrat and you have this Republican that probably, on, you know, the face of things, don't agree on anything. But where do they come together? They came together at BHA, and they came together around public lands and public waters. And so, very tangible thing, I would say, that happened just around the rendezvous. And that's something we try to do all the time, is just invite folks, you know, to come that support our public lands. You know, you mentioned the Great American Outdoors Act, kind of that got passed this last summer. You know, it had $900 million a year for Land and Water Conservation Fund, and $9.5 billion to address the backlog. Like, that was passed in huge bipartisan fashion. And when we say bipartisan, what does that mean? It was like 72 to like 18. There was a few people that didn't vote in the Senate. Like, that's Democrats and Republicans voting for something that normally hate each other and want to talk about the biggest differences. But there they came together. I would say most recently, this happened on Thursday of last week, which happened to be Earth Day, that legislation was introduced called the Recovering America's Wildlife Act. RAWA, which is in short, basically tries to keep common species common and then those other species out of the emergency room so that we don't have to put them on the endangered species list. So this funding, if this bill is passed, will go towards state agencies and tribal agencies to make sure that we know about the species that we care about and then do appropriate conservation, again, to keep them common if they're common and to keep them out of the emergency room if not. That was introduced with two Republicans and two Democrats. That is bipartisan. And again, what is it around? It's not about public lands and public waters. It's around public wildlife, right? So it's this third kind of these three things. And not that they can't come, you know, together and agree on other things like when they should take vacation and how much money they should be paid or that kind of thing. And I'm being a little glib there, but what do they come together again all the time around? It's public lands, public waters, and in this case, public wildlife. And so that to me is what bipartisan is. And again, like from BHA's perspective, yeah, we're partisan as hell. And it's for hunting and fishing and conservation. That's how we make our decisions every single day.
Yep. Rachel?
Well, how do you follow up that?
That was going to be my question, but go ahead.
I know. Well, so as you know, I spent the last 3 years literally working in government and politics. And so I had the extreme luxury of coming into that world from private industry. So talk about a 180 on a level that my mind could barely comprehend. But I was able to come in this amazing space that is outdoor recreation. And when I was coming into it, it was outdoor recreation and government, outdoor recreation and industry. Hardly ever did political party really come up, because yes, I was working in government. Yes, we were working, you know, politics has everything to do with it, but it's this amazing thing where all of a sudden, like if you're talking about outdoor recreation and you're talking about doing things that we love and are passionate about, like those labels and those easy buckets that you can put people in just kind of melt away, because, you know, like you meet somebody at a conference and you've got different offices of outdoor rec from different, you know, states and different agency leaders. No one is literally like, what party are they in? What party are they in? What, like, that is just never a conversation because of the space and like what we worked on. It was literally like, hey, are you a climber? Hey, are you a hunter? And, you know, I was like, kind of like our group's like hunter gal, right? Like, it's like, those are the labels that we were talking about. And it was just this like amazing, remarkable space and energy that was created. But that's what is so applicable to BHA. And I think by and large, even above a lot of others out there, is like, we're not going in asking for how do you classify yourself this way or how do you classify yourself that way. You're coming in and being like, what tags did you draw this year? And like, no one cares, because ultimately we all know what we care about, and we care about hunting. We care about fishing. We care about habitat. We care about all the things that support what we love and what we're passionate about. And so recreation and hunting and angling, like this is literally the space that people from very, very, very polar opposite spaces can come together and have the most remarkable conversations and find out they have everything in common. And you see it over and over and over again. And so that's why I'm so excited to like even see in the last like 4 or 5 years, this growth of conversation out of shared passion. And I think that it's like this one small glimmering, like shining beacon in all of this partisan craziness out there, that, you know, we are able to come together and make headway. Like Lan said, like the Great American Outdoors Act, like that was like, again, this like shining beacon. It's like, oh my gosh, like what is it that we all have in common? And you look at that, but then it's like, well, geez, if we have that in common and, you know, we all care about that, just think about maybe what else we have in common. We're not willing to listen to each other. So I don't know, just, I've loved being, you know, I loved working in the Office of Outdoor Rec because of that. And then obviously, you know, working with BHA and knowing the membership and knowing how we work together. Like we just don't paint each other into boxes. We just care about what we care about.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting, to me, it was always, as I try to think about how this works in my own life, I think about what I'm passionate about, right? And I think about how that helps me
you know, level set my value system. What do I care about? You know, what can I really impact in the world? And then you say, okay, well, hunting, fishing, wild places, you know, healthy ecosystems, populations of wild game that we can all value, you know, that we have in public trust. And then you think, okay, well, how does that help us bridge the divides that we know are there socially, culturally, you know, and oftentimes physically? And that's where this becomes a bridge. What we're talking about, the subject matter we're talking about, becomes a bridge because we share so much in this realm. We often say that, at least on this show, that it's pretty easy in this continent, at least, because most people share value for wildlife. We kind of have different ways of approaching how to manage that wildlife, how to interact and cohabitate, and some of those really complex issues. But by damn, we all share this idea that we want them around, and we all look up at that mountain. We all say, looks pretty cool. I'd like that to stay there. You know, I'd like that to remain the way it is now. So it is Lantani. It feels like we're at least standing on a bridge if we haven't already walked across it, huh?
Yeah.
Well, just like Land was talking about how he was talking about the birds and rattling off the birds in his backyard, and he watches birds. I would rather gouge my eyeballs out with a toothpick. But I appreciate that Land likes the birds, and I am happy he cares about them, because I care about those things too, but I like the ones I can kill, and I don't really pay attention to the other ones. Just being honest, but I support Land in his bird watching.
Thank you, Rachel. I guess one other angle I'd say, Ben, too, is that that I would describe bipartisan is that, you know, we've been talking about how we all come together, you know, for a shared cause. And that's all been positive. But there's also those things that are proposed that are either by a Democrat or a Republican that we do not agree with. And what is awesome is to see the pushback that comes back in a bipartisan fashion, right? It's like Democrats will push back against a Democrat. The Republican pushback, that's easy to anticipate, right? Like, oh, a Democrat did something, Republicans are just going to say no. Same thing with Democrats, you know, like a Republican does something, and then Democrats are easy to see there. But when you have Democrats and Republicans and independents pushing back on an ill-fated idea, that is where, like, the power comes in. So we can talk about the positive pieces, which we have been, but I also think when there is something that needs to be pushed back on that somebody proposed that just wasn't well-educated or has a pet project that isn't good for public lands, isn't good for public waters, is not good for public wildlife, the amount of pushback that comes back that is bipartisan against that, I think that is a true sense of really what that word is, because it'd be easy to be quiet about it.
Yeah, we had that recently. I would say even within the organization, there were some, I had a position on crossbows, that one that really wasn't agreed upon by our Montana chapter. And we were able to, I think because of this, we understand each other. We have a shared value system. Worked through that pretty damn quickly. Say like, here's where I am, here's where you are. I had a lot of emailers want to discuss it. We discussed it on air and off, and we're able to work through some of those things and get to a place where there was, I think both sides were probably unlikely to agree, but came to an agreement pretty damn quickly to say, like, I think if we had a position, this is what it ought to be. Boom, done. Living the good life. And I think that's because go ahead.
Well, sorry to cut you off. I guess I would say that's part about, like, again, that bipartisanship is the ability to have conversations, and then this dirty word called compromise, right? Like, when did that become a compromise? Or, you know, when did it become, like, when did compromise become a dirty word?
Yeah.
Like, compromise is, like, how the world works. Like, I don't know, Ben, how you're doing with your wife and these two young kids, but if you were like, this is going to be my way or the highway, that wouldn't work out very well. You know, and I would say the same thing if I was like, Rachel, well, maybe this is a bad example, but Rachel, you got to drink, like, Boone's Farm for the rest of your life only. Like, and she's like, no, well, how about, you know, BHA's Infidel? And I was like, okay, we can compromise, right? Like, so, like, and that's not the best example. I apologize for that. But I think this idea of conversations, actually listening to somebody and then coming up with, like, something that works for both people, like, that is, like, one of the best things about bipartisanship that I can, like, even, like, mm-hmm. I mean, and this idea that, oh, you flip-flopped or you changed, you know, the way you thought about something. Man, if we're not able to listen to people that we disagree with and find a path forward with them, like, what world are we living in? You know, like, this idea that we're just going to beat everybody over the head and you got to think exactly the way I do, like, that is not the way the world works. And I think that's one of the important things about bipartisanship is finding compromise in the middle.
I don't trust and don't feel comfortable in a situation where you have a group of people that 100% agree with one another, because that is complete and utter horse shit. We don't all agree on everything. And so I'm happy to work with people in the areas that we do agree on things together. But like, if you talk about compromise, I feel like compromise comes from like a more defensive position, like something has happened to me. And so I'm in a defensive position. And so therefore we now are compromising. And so like, if you look at it on the flip side, like the buzzword is collaboration. And I feel like collaboration is doing the same thing, but it's doing it in a proactive instead of a reactive manner. I guess offensive, defensive maybe is wrong, but again, compromise is like from this reactive versus collaboration comes from this like proactive space. You're still doing the same thing. It's just that oftentimes when you get to the point where it's compromised, people feel attacked. People feel, you know, like things are happening to them that are out of their control. And that's why we've made so much headway, like in proactive collaboration, I think over the years to get these things done. And I think there's a huge shift that way. So I don't know. Compromise isn't a bad word. It's just often done in a space and a place where people feel a little more frantic about it.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think that being, you know, reminding each other all the time that we're kind of starting from a similar place. There's a lot of people that want to argue that we're not, you know, that a rancher from Wyoming can't get along with a suburban kid from New York. I think you would both agree that we've seen that in BHA in spades. And Land, you're probably the number one evidence that you can go from pint night to, you know, chapter meeting to back when we could travel. Like we were getting on you a lot for traveling too much and being out there too much and being too involved, if that's a possible thing, because we wanted you to keep your sanity and be able to lead our organization. But the truth is, you probably as much as anybody have seen kind of people gathering around these ideas and shared value systems instead of coming to it like, well, there's no way we can get along. And I'm pretty happy that the thing I love the most is kind of the campfire that people are gathering around. It's pretty amazing. It's unbelievable. I feel so lucky to be in that situation.
Yeah, the campfire is pretty amazing. And I think, you know, and I'm going to butcher this a little bit, but I think, you know, Jim Posowitz would talk about like the hunter with the right heart. You know, and that's again, like what I find all across the country. And you mentioned, you know, some suburban or some, you know, city person from New York and a rancher. Like that shared love for like the landscapes that, you know, we all get to participate in, you know, that we're very lucky, that 640 million acres that belongs to us all. Like that shared love for those opportunities and just the ability to even think and dream about it like that. That's a place where I think we all start and it's something that binds us. And then after that, you know, it's really individuals that have different perspectives on different angles of that. But at the end of the day, can agree that that is like one of the main things that binds us. And to me, that's one of the most exciting things is like when I go to like North Carolina, a place I really hadn't been until this job, and I'm ready to be underwhelmed by their public lands, underwhelmed by their commitment to conservation. You know, I'm growing up in Montana and this is something of what we do and who we are. And I got over there and they had the same passion for the public lands. They have amazing public lands from the coast to the mountains. And, you know, to learn from them and like the birthplace of like modern, I think Gifford Pinchot, you know, there's like even a cabin where like the birthplace of like kind of forestry was in this country. Like, they're so prideful about that piece, you know, and I really didn't know that story until I came there. And when I go to all these different places across North America, that same story is told. The characters may be different, but that pride and like and what they have and where they're going and how they're participating in this unique experiment, like they're just excited to be part of that, man. And that to me fills the bucket, as I've said before. And while it might have been driving me nuts a little bit and you know, wasn't great for myself physically or mentally, man, it was awesome too, and I can't wait to do it again.
Yeah, to your point, man, I'm just this conversation to be able to talk about these concepts and think about the success that BHA has had has been an easy road, but there are so many points along the way that we can celebrate, and to have to kind of take a year off from gathering and then know that we're barreling towards another celebration of what this is and what we do, man. I couldn't be more elated, more excited, more hopeful to see that coming together. So I guess I want to say to both you guys, thanks for the work that you do and have done and will do. It means a lot to me, and I know the listeners of this show, if you're so many of you are BHA members, but if you're not, I know you all still admire the work that's being done. And again, as you always say, Lan, I mean, if it's not BHA, there's a bunch of great organizations out there to spend your conservation time, energy, and dollars. Boy, I sure do like BHA, but that doesn't mean I don't also love NWTF and RMEF. And
you don't have to be a member to do the work. That's the thing, is like, join us in the conversation, listen to the conversations. If something hits you and you're passionate about that, you don't have to be invited to participate. And that is part, I think that's part of the problem, is that it's daunting. And like, how am I involved? How can I get involved? And obviously that's what BHA is about, is teaching people and helping people be involved, elevate their voice, use their actions. But you don't have to be a member. Like, you can reach out, you can take action. Everyone is invited to the table. That's what we're supposed to do. We elect people and then we tell them what to do, or we go and we work with policymakers. We do all of those things. It's the hard work, and it's, you don't see it right away and you don't see the tangible benefit right away, but it's the hard work that everyone's willing to tackle when we sign on for this. So,
yeah. I've seen in these recent state legislative sessions after an election, the flurry of legislation that gets pushed on a state level. It's happened here in Montana. It's happened in Utah. Name a state, basically. And our state leaders, chapter leaders, have jumped into this with both feet in every example that I've ever seen. And like I said, whether or not I understand the issue or even agree with the stance, I know that those people are coming from a place that I appreciate and coming from a place that I value. And they're fighting for the things I'm going to fight for. So, I mean, that's it's damn good to have that knowledge that all those people are out there.
Yeah, and I would say that, you know, none of what we have today happened by accident, right? Like, you know, we stand on the shoulders of giants, and whether that's the big people that we know about, like the Theodore Roosevelts and the Aldo Leopolds of the world. By the way, that's best shirt of all time, like Aldo effing Leopold. Like, I love that shirt. That all these things that we experience today are because other people stepped up at the state legislatures, at the federal level, right? Like, and it's not like that ever goes away. It's just our time to do our part. And how exciting that we can get to have this conversation about being engaged, where in other parts of the world, we would be fighting for scraps. And like, here, we're trying to preserve something that's available to everybody. And how lucky are we? Like, that is, like, to me, and again, I know that we don't get to this finish line, right? And be like, okay, we're done. Like, we've done it all. Like, we don't have to do any other work. Like, it's always going to be there. And I hope that, you know, my young kids care about it, or somebody else's young kids care about it and help move it forward. But again, I'm just excited to have such an amazing team to hang out with, to do this every single day. And Ben, I would count you with that, like, every step of the way. And I was joking, you know, a little bit about that Ben Long, you know, kind of email that I looked up, but it's the truth, man. Like, you stick out, and I just appreciate you on the team.
Nah, it's good to be a part of it. As I probably told you from the very beginning, I've said a bunch of different times, you know, I have a son now. I just spent 11 days on our public lands straight hunting turkeys, and every single tag I bought, anyone can buy.
Yeah.
And all very affordable, all extremely accessible. You can camp, you can fish, you can hike, you can turkey hunt. I just did that. It's not a concept that you can't feel. Like, I didn't put a single boot print on private ground that wasn't, you know, wasn't me getting out of the truck on the highway to take a piss. So I know that, I celebrate that in my daily life, and it's not a lost on me when I watch my little kid, you know, smile and understand that same thing. So I told you, I probably the first time we talked on the phone after that Ben Long email, I said, I'll do it, man, because I'm about to have a kid.
Yeah.
And I want that young man to know what I know. He'll do with it whatever he pleases, and he'll be free to use it as much as he like. But I just want him to know that resource is there for him, and those people that defend it are standing there right beside you. So it's it all sounds very highfalutin right now and very inspirational, but hey, it is. I'm sorry, it is. Deal with it. We're inspired. If you don't like it, leave. No, just kidding. It's all very inspiring, and so thank you to Rachel, and thanks to you, Land, and we'll hope to see you in Missoula, everybody. Come on by. I'll have some turkey nuggets at the very least ready for everybody.
You've heard it here. There'll be turkey nuggets, and then Rachel will have a big blue bar. So, you can't go wrong with either one of those things.
We should make it. Like I said, a mega camp is in the offing where we eat. Everybody has their job to do. You know, everybody specifically, you got to provide this.
Correct. Yes.
We got to come together at times like this, especially whiskey, Zinfandel, whatever else. So, all right, guys, thank you so much. I appreciate you. Backcountryhunters.org. Go check it out. Check out the rendezvous. Sign up now. Join us virtually or in person. It will be an epic party. See you guys.
See you, Ben. Thank you.
Thanks for having us on. Good talking as always.
That's it. That's all. Another episode in the books. Thank you to Lan Tawney, Rachel Schmidt, and everybody at BHA. So please come join us at the Rendezvous, one of the coolest gatherings and one of the coolest organizations in all of hunting and conservation. And please come join us for Phil's first turkey hunt, which is coming right up here in the weeks to come, the final 2 weeks of the program. I guess the end of our shows for the rest of this, we want to try to address, you know, the end of this here program. And as you would expect, Phil, hundreds of emails coming in, DMs, Instagram DMs, a lot of people, some people confused, some people angry. So, which, hey, the podcast was free. So, you know, It was always free. Some people wanted to reflect, a lot of people just generally interested in the reasoning behind the show going away. I don't want to get into any of that, but what I will do is read some emails from some folks who are reflective and even emotional. So you're going to see that evolution with our buddy Josh Engelhart. He wrote in, "Dear sweet Benjamin and Philip, I am a smidgen behind on my podcast, but I was just told by my chapter leader that the podcast is over. WTF. I just heard a few seconds ago, and I feel like I'm going to throw up. THC is a sunny spot in my life, and I'm sad to hear the news. Is there anything we can do to keep it around? I still have to listen to the most recent podcast. Fuck, this sucks so much. Thanks for doing what you do. I'll miss you guys." Josh, like many people, Josh took a little bit of time to reflect and then wrote back in a little bit later. He said, "First, I'd like to apologize for my last email. I admit I was a bit emotional hearing the news of the end. It might be weird, but having you in my ear or on my radio is like sitting down with an old friend. Not the kind you haven't seen since childhood or dread conversation with, but the sort where no matter how long you've been apart, you can pick it up just as though you spoke yesterday. I have thoroughly enjoyed listening to your conservation conversations. You've challenged my way of thinking and opened my mind. It sounds dramatic, but I feel I live differently after all the time spent listening to the show. I'm slower to judge and much more empathetic than I've ever been. I guess I just want to say thanks for not just for the show, but for how you've made my life better. I feel like I'm losing a friend. Is this email going to be dissolved after the show is over? Is there any way to still contact you after the end? Thanks, fellas. Josh." First of all, THC at themeateater.com, I imagine will live on forever, Phil.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think so?
Sure.
Do you think they'll just delete it?
There's no reason to shut it down.
Yeah. Sure, let's keep it going.
I mean, as long as Ben's reading the emails.
Yeah, I'll definitely read the email. Listen, you can get a hold of me any which way. Instagram, THC at themeateater.com. Join one of our chapters. Get in touch with the leaders of those chapters. I'll still be very active in that kind of stuff. And we'll still have many ways to communicate. As much as I do also feel like I'm losing thousands and thousands of friends, because people say, "Do you have friends?" I'm like, "Phew, thousands of them."
Yeah.
You won't even know how many friends I have. But in all serious, Josh and everyone else listening that shares his emotions, we take this very seriously here. The connection we've had with you has been awesome. The fact that so many of you have been willing to spend time not only listening to us but interacting with us, whether you drew Phil's voice face or you wrote a poetic review for this program or you made a video about a conservation bill. I can't think of all the other things.
Or you left a one-star review on iTunes calling Ben a green decoy.
Yeah, any of those things.
Sure.
A dirty lib. Any of those things that you did to spend time with us.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. All of it, man. All of it has been fun, and it's been one hell of a long run for us. And so we will continue to be reflective and celebrate this with all of you. But the main thing is that we're not going to change what we've been here to do for the next couple episodes, which is laugh, make fun of ourselves, but also have some conversations that challenge us and that push us forward, because that job is never going to be over. It could go on for as long as I'm around and as long as Phil's around and as long as all of you are out there. So first things first, thank you. Second thing, go find your THC chapter on Facebook and join. And those connections that you may make there will keep this podcast and everything it means to me and to you going into the future, even when it's not here anymore. Anything, Phil, that you'd like to add to that?
Not really. I mean, we could have the show go on for like 8 seasons.
Yeah.
And then in the last season, they crown Bran the king of Westeros and people are disappointed.
Yeah.
Because he has a good story or something, right?
Oh, man, yeah. I think we might end this like The Sopranos.
Exactly.
Me and Phil will just be having breakfast after the turkey hunt.
And then cut to black.
Yeah, fade to black.
Instead of, do you know what makes a good king? A story. Do you know who has a good story? Like that kid who's
Shut
been living,
up,
in,
little
living in a tree for 4 years.
Yeah. He wasn't even in one season. The last episode could just be us recapping that for Steven Ranella, as was one of my favorite
moments.
Yeah,
screw my turkey hunt. Let's bring Steve back in here. We'll force him to watch Game of Thrones.
And just probably fire me right at that moment.
Uh-huh.
I'll be out. All right, guys.
Anyway, sorry. I think you wanted something heartfelt from me.
No, I didn't.
No, okay.
I would admit to it being like, it feels like a little bit self-serving to be heartfelt, because then you have to just build up something that... is just a podcast. But again, I'm listening, man. I hear you guys. I've read all your emails. If I haven't replied to you, I apologize. Your DMs or your emails, but I've read them all, and I'm catching all the feels there, Philly. Catching all the feels. It's important to us. I know it's important to you. So thank you for listening. We got two more episodes, 176 and 177. You know what's coming, and that's Phil the Engineer killing a turkey. No pressure, Phil, but it means a lot to me. Say bye.
Bye.
Clean your gun and tune your bow. We're the Hunting Collective Show. Calling hunters new and old. The Hunting Collective Show. Working pick and shovel or working pen in hand. We congregate now as lovers of the land. Mindful and we're focused. We're just living for the search. Dreaming of a fire and a salty Gilbert. But we ain't coming back till it's cold and late. We're taking it slow so we can shoot straight. Clean your gun, tune your bow. We're the Hunting Collective Show. Calling hunters.